It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, when a recipe only calls for a little bit of one ingredient, what do you do with all those extras that are left over? On Food Friday, we talk to the author of the new cookbook, To the Last Bite, and find out how to make the most out of all those ingredients without wasting stuff. First, it's National Mental Health Awareness Month. Over the past few decades, research shows that stigma towards some common mental illnesses like depression and anxiety disorders has decreased drastically. But people who have mental illnesses that cause psychosis, things like schizophrenia, are rarely included in the conversation. People with psychotic symptoms like hallucinations or delusions can still face stereotyping and discrimination. A 2013 study from the National Institutes of Health found more negative stereotypes and less willingness to help for people labeled as at risk for schizophrenia than for non-psychotic mental health disorders like depression and anxiety. We're learning about psychosis and why it still carries that stigma, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you or a loved one experienced one of the different kinds of psychosis? What were your interactions with medical and psychiatric care like? What do you think people get wrong about it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. Raquel Meshulam-Gately is an assistant professor of psychology at Harvard Medical School and a licensed clinical psychologist. She's director of neuropsychology research and the Consumer Advisory Board at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston. Raquel, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting me to join your show. I'm really delighted to be here. And I just want to note that I am especially honored to be included in the show with your next guest, Cindy Hodge from the Wildflower Alliance. I know that their work was just featured in a New York Times Magazine article last week, and I am so impressed with the incredibly important and valuable work that they do.
Now, I just mentioned the word psychosis a couple times. Can you give us kind of a working definition for our conversation? What do we mean by psychosis?
Sure. Well, first, let me say that psychosis is a set of symptoms, not a diagnosis. So it is not the same thing as a diagnosis like schizophrenia, although schizophrenia is one of several conditions in which psychotic symptoms are a primary feature. So psychosis is a set of symptoms referring to a loss of contact with reality or difficulty telling what's real from what is not. The symptoms can also make it harder for a person to think clearly, to communicate, relate to others, and to feel emotions. A person can experience psychosis for numerous reasons, such as in the context of drug use, medical issues like seizures or sleep deprivation, postpartum, traumatic stress, grief, medical treatments, dementia, or a psychiatric condition such as schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, or depression. So when someone seeks help for psychotic symptoms, so many factors are considered, such as their specific symptoms, when they started, the severity, extent of distress and impact, and the potential causes and influences. And I'll also note that psychosis is a lot more common than people tend to think. Symptoms fall on a continuum based on severity, frequency, and impact, just like depression and anxiety or any other condition for that matter. And we all fall somewhere on the spectrum, which can fluctuate over time or in different circumstances. I think we can all think of times when maybe because we didn't sleep well, we were under the influence of a substance, we experienced a lot of stress one day, or a variety of other reasons, we may have noticed that our thoughts or perceptions weren't as clear as they typically are. So because of that, we often avoid using the terms normal or abnormal, but rather familiar versus distressing. And just one last important point I want to make is that early intervention can really help to promote recovery and reduce disability. We know that treatment delays often lead to poorer outcomes. And there's now more help than ever for people experiencing signs of serious mental illnesses. Early recognition and intervention can make a real difference for people.
I want to get to that stigma issue. I got to say, in the popular culture landscape I grew up in, if I saw, say, a TV show or movie with somebody identified with schizophrenia or hearing voices, if it was a comedy, it was played for laughs. It wasn't a comedy. the person was portrayed as very dangerous. And that's what I grew up knowing, quote unquote, about these conditions. Can you talk about the damage that might do?
Absolutely. And you're right. There has long been an association between schizophrenia and dangerousness, as well as a lot of other negative misperceptions and misunderstandings about the conditions. And those attitudes really negatively impact upon the lives of people living with the condition. They're linked to less social interaction, lower levels of recovery and vocational functioning and quality of life. Plus, because of that stigma, people who have the condition aren't willing to talk about it as much. They aren't willing to seek out care for it as frequently. Their family members by association also will feel shame and often won't seek out care for their loved ones. And sometimes clinicians are not willing to disclose a diagnosis of psychosis to patients or schizophrenia because of that negative association with it. So it can do a lot of damage. And I think even the term just over time has been so abused in the media and just in our day-to-day language. I mean, it's often used as an adjective to describe any kind of erratic behavior, you know, whether it be referring to the government, financial market, sports. I mean, the list can go on and on. So I think that's really confused people about what schizophrenia is.
We're talking to Raquel Meshulam-Gately from Harvard Medical School, looking at some of the different conditions that cause psychosis, schizophrenia included in that, and other psychological conditions. You can join in if you have a story you'd be willing to share at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Raquel, you mentioned the value of early treatment. So suppose somebody recognizes this in themselves or a family member, overcomes that stigma, goes to seek treatment, gets a clinician who's ready to work with them. What kind of things are out there that can help?
Right. Well, we know the best kind of treatments out there, especially for the early phases of psychosis, are coordinated specialty care models. And there's, I'll just speak of Massachusetts, there's numerous clinics available here where they offer a variety of services, not just medication, but different types of psychosocial interventions. Peer support is often included, family-based treatments. So it's a really integrated, comprehensive approach to trying to help with those early symptoms of psychosis. And we do know, again, that the earlier you intervene in these conditions, the better the outcomes are. So we really encourage that. And I'll just say, too, that I'm involved with an initiative within Massachusetts called the Massachusetts Psychosis Network for Early Treatment. And within that, we provide training and technical assistance to providers across the state to really try to link them up with the best practices and models for helping people with psychosis.
Now, for someone who is interacting with someone, maybe a loved one, maybe a patient, and that loved one or patient says, "Yeah, I'm hearing things that I think aren't there," or other things that might be signs of psychosis of one form or another. Can you talk about the best ways to respond, you know, not with that initial maybe fear or stigma, but with compassion in a way that's going to help somebody get help?
Right. I am so glad that you mentioned that, because responding in a way that shows compassion is one of the most important tools for helping people who are experiencing psychosis, so that the focus is really on understanding versus fixing, and really open connection building types of questions that show real genuine empathy and curiosity versus questions or statements that sound prescriptive or judgmental. And I think regardless of whether you have psychosis or not, everybody wants to be treated that way. I think the same rules apply to speaking to someone with psychosis as it would for anyone else experiencing distress. That connection, that empathy, the non-judgmental kinds of ways of speaking are just so incredibly important.
Let's bring on a caller. Marcus is with us in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi.
Hi. So my question is, with like a psychosis brought on by something like PTSD from war or some other traumatic event, I have heard studies recently that they're talking about using psilocybin mushrooms, like magic mushrooms, to basically induce the psychosis to help resolve the original PTSD psychosis issue. And I guess I was just wondering the doctor's thoughts on that juxtaposition between using something that creates a psychosis to solve the psychosis.
Marcus, thanks for that call. Raquel, I feel like I've seen headlines about this again and again. Is there research going on that says this could be a positive step?
I have to say that I'm not aware of a lot of research that's been done in that area yet. Kind of like you said, there's certainly been a lot of headlines about it, but whether there's a strong evidence base behind that, it seems like the jury is still out, and that, you know, we need more research to really understand whether that can be beneficial for people in the long term.
Thanks for the call, Marcus. And Raquel, thanks again for joining us today.
Oh, I'm delighted. Thanks so much for having me.
That's Raquel Meshulam-Gately, assistant professor of psychology at Harvard Medical School, licensed clinical psychologist. She's director of neuropsychology research and the Consumer Advisory Board at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston. We're talking about psychosis, the stigma around it, possible treatments. And coming up, we're going to hear about a support group and the Hearing Voices movement. You can join in at 800-642-1234. We'll be talking about peer-to-peer support for psychosis. What do you want to know about that? Have you done that yourself? Call 800-642-1234. We'll pick up that conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation about breaking the stigma surrounding schizophrenia and other conditions that can cause psychosis. A grassroots campaign called the Hearing Voices Movement is working to empower people who experience psychosis to talk about it openly and get support from their peers. The Hearing Voices Movement aims to validate the experiences of people with psychosis, provide coping mechanisms, and eliminate shame. I want to listen to some people who have taken part in the Hearing Voices Movement talk about their experiences. This is from a documentary called Beyond Possible, How the Hearing Voices Approach Transforms Lives.
My life changed dramatically because the voices that used to taunt me all the time, used to beat me up, they don't do that anymore. Because the simple fact I'm sharing my experience with other people, what I went through with my voice.
A big thing for me was knowing that I wasn't alone and not being judged. A place that I could talk freely, not worrying about, am I going to end up in the hospital?
It's given me clarity, that's given me more stability, more confidence. I was shy. Now I can speak out loud. It's really given me back my sense of self.
There's been limited research on the Hearing Voices approach, but some early research has shown promising signs. Cindy Hadge is lead trainer at the Wildflower Alliance, a group that offers peer-to-peer support for people who experience voices, visions, unusual beliefs, and extreme states. Cindy, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
I understand you've been a member of Hearing Voices support groups yourself. Can you share some of your personal experience and how it is, how it's worked for you?
Absolutely. I was at a point in my life where I was on Thorazine, and I was contemplating ending my life. I had tried very hard to use the traditional approaches to navigating the experience, and it really wasn't working for me. And I thought about peer support because I had an experience with a 12-step peer support really helping me. And I just typed in mental health peer support, and I found out I lived within walking distance of one of the only groups at the time, the only Hearing Voices group in the United States. And in going to that group, instead of being a patient or mentally ill, people mirrored back strength to me. And I got to hear other people who are given the same diagnosis, and they were creating lives that they wanted to live. And in that moment, I thought, you know, maybe that's possible for me too.
Can you talk about what you talk about when you get together with people in a Hearing Voices support group?
Well, we have the freedom to talk about whatever we want to talk about. But for an example, at one time I had a huge fear, and it was making it hard to sleep at night. I kept having this fear that somebody would enter my apartment. And when I went to the group, I talked about the fear. They didn't say, oh, you're being silly or don't worry. They asked me questions about the fear, and we narrowed it down to I had a fear that I would wake up to someone standing over my bed. And as a group, we brainstormed what to do, and I put pots and pans on my stairs so that I would be awake before, you know, anybody would be able to come in. And what happened was I was able to get sleep, you know, calm down, and I realized what had activated that fear in me, that I had seen a violent act outside my apartment that, you know, unconsciously reminded me of a time in my past where my experience was that I would wake up as a kid to somebody standing over my bed. So it was really neat to have people be curious about the context of my experience.
That sounds at root like really empowering. Like you and the other people in the group took charge and figured out, brainstormed problems or solutions to your problem instead of somebody coming and solving it for you. How big a part of this peer-to-peer concept is that?
Well, it's truly about sharing experience, strength, and hope, and that people do develop strategies to deal for these unusual experiences, and they can learn from each other. Not that any one person has the right answer for somebody else, but to say there are options, there are things that I can do. They really encouraged me to become the expert of my experience. Like, when does that voice come? Does it come in relationship to anything? Have you gotten messages like that at another point in your life? How do you feel about those messages? Can you, you know, set kind of some kind of limits with those messages, with those voices? How do you understand them? How do you make meaning of them? And those are questions that I had not received in the traditional mental health system. You know, in the traditional system, I was simply told, we need to adjust your medication. That would be the response.
What do you wish people who don't experience these things, what do you wish that that they knew about what you go through and how you experience it?
Well, just, you know, you may not have ever had a voice yelling at you, but I bet you've had somebody yell at you, right?
Sure.
And so can you imagine how that feels? And so when somebody tells you, you know, I have a voice yelling at me, it's really not helpful to say, oh, just ignore it. It's not real. Instead, it might be helpful to say, that sounds really hard. I wouldn't like it if somebody was yelling at me. You know, those are the things that are helpful to acknowledge that even if you're not sharing the experience that person is having, they are really having that experience.
If somebody out there is listening right now and saying, wow, this is me or this is my loved one, how do people seek out this kind of peer-to-peer support experience?
And so they can definitely reach out to the Wildflower Alliance, and I'm hoping there's a way that you share our website. And there are lots of Hearing Voices groups all over the U.S., and we also have a number of family and friends groups. So people come in and they say, you know, I want to support my loved one. And we'll talk about, you know, how do they take care of their own selves? How do they deal with their own fear? You were talking about stigma earlier, and, you know, what do you, you know, a lot of times people, it's not the person hearing the voices that is in crisis. Sometimes it's the family member who's in crisis because they so much want to fix it, end it, cure it, solve it in a moment. And so anyways, family members need support too. And we encourage family members to actually show curiosity instead of fear and to show, you know, a faith in their loved one. You know, I believe in you. I love you. You know, I hope for good things for you versus I'm afraid of you and we got to get you to the hospital.
We've got a link up to a Dane County Hearing Voices support group at WPR.org/Central Time. We'll get one up there, by the way, for the Wildflower Alliance as well. We heard at the outset, Cindy, in that documentary, some people with, I think, amazing stories to share. What we heard your story. What do you hear from other people who have also joined peer-to-peer support about how it's changed the way they live their lives?
Because what's been really helpful, I think, for a lot of people is to find out they're not alone and that other people can navigate this, and maybe they can too. That we, as I said earlier, we really shift the focus to, you know, what are your strengths and what do you want to do? And for once, you know, people aren't trying to tell other people what to do. It's more like, what would you like to do and how can we support you in that? And just building people up instead of marginalizing them with labels, and knowing that there's so many more tools to put in your toolbox than a psychiatric drug. You know, there's a place for that, or people get to decide how those work in your life. But there's also all these other things that you can do, some of which are clinical and some of them are, you know, peer support based.
And just our last half minute or so, Cindy, it seems like people have been more willing lately to talk about things like depression and anxiety. Are you hoping that for schizophrenia and other causes and symptoms of psychosis that people are going to be willing and feel safe to talk about it?
Well, first, I have to like challenge the question in that, you know, part of my recovery is getting as much distance from those words. Part of my recovery is getting distance from the diagnosis of schizophrenia, because that diagnosis comes with a horrible prognosis. You know, I was told, you know, you'll be on medication your whole life, you'll never be able to work, and I believed it for a while. Once I said, you know, maybe that's not true. You know, maybe it's trauma I need to heal, or maybe, you know, I have a spiritual experiences, or I have gifts. So I had to change that framework to a framework that included recovery and hope and growth. Those particular frameworks do not hold much of that. And so they really kept me stuck.
Cindy, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for sharing your experience with us today.
Welcome.
That's Cindy Hatch, lead trainer at the Wildflower Alliance, a group that offers peer-to-peer support for people experiencing psychosis. For Wisconsinites interested in the resource, there is a Hearing Voices group in Madison. You can find a link to that group and to the Wildflower Alliance at WPR.org/Central Time. Coming up, it's Food Friday. We'll talk to the author of a new cookbook about how to use up all those leftover ingredients before they go bad. I'm Rob Verrett. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. Tell me if this sounds familiar. You've been cooking dinners all week, and when you open up the fridge on Friday, you've got a bunch of extra ingredients you need to use up. Maybe a big hunk of mozzarella from homemade pizza, a ton of leftover fresh parsley after a pasta dinner, or a huge chunk of celery if you use just one or two of the stalks. How do you put all that food to use and keep it out of the trash? Our Food Friday guest has recipes for all your food extras and advice for reducing food waste. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have those ingredients that you have a hard time using up before they go bad? Have you come up with recipes, ways to make use of those ingredients? Do you compost stuff? How important is reducing food waste to you? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Alexis Dabashnik is a recipe developer based in New York. She's the author of the new cookbook, To the Last Bite, Recipes and Ideas for Making the Most of Your Ingredients. Alexis, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you write that your mom was someone who really practiced this philosophy of wasting as little as possible. Obviously, you picked that up. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. You know, I think as many of us, when I was a kid, I didn't appreciate it. And then growing up and kind of looking back at her ethos, I was like, oh, this is, you know, not totally unique, but definitely something special as we're all trying to be a little more sustainable in our everyday lives. She was kind of embodying that, you know, all along.
Now, this isn't just a treatise on food waste. This is a cookbook with lots of recipes. Can you talk about, apart from the food waste, which we'll get into a bit, just your approach to coming up with and developing recipes?
Totally. I mean, I like to create recipes that are high impact with low effort. So that's using a handful of ingredients to get you really the most flavor and really exciting dishes with some unique combinations. And the book is actually broken out. You know, you can look at it like a regular old cookbook. It's broken out into the familiar sections or in this kind of choose your own adventure way. And that's kind of the way to use up the food waste.
Right. Literally, there's a recipe and then down there's like a footnote like, hey, this is the thing you're going to have left over. And so you point toward other things that you can make with that in the cookbook. And honestly, that's often the way I cook. Like, what is in the fridge that I need to use up with before it goes bad? Is that your starting point a lot of the time?
Yeah, I polled a lot of friends and family and was like, what do you waste? What's left over? And most people said produce and dairy. So that's really what I focused on. Although there's a few other things in there too, but you know, using up that container of sour cream, using up that bunch of celery, you know, that bunch of parsley, figuring out ways to use up these ingredients, you know, that's more than just a tablespoon, using a whole can of tomato paste so you don't have that like lingering bit left in the fridge.
Guilty on all charges. You mentioned celery, and let's go right there. You gave us some recipes. We've got them at WPR.org/Food Friday. Yeah, celery is a big one for me. I make some soup, but want a little celery in it, but you have to buy it in this like 8-pound brick of celery, and I use a stalk or two. You gave us a celery salad with walnuts and pecorino. Tell us about this.
Yes. I mean, I feel like celery is rarely the star of the show. And I really wanted to create a recipe that, you know, gave it its due. You know, it has a really delicious, punchy dressing with it. There's cheese, there's crunchy walnuts. So you're getting kind of all these great flavors. And I have to say, everyone who's made it is such a fan.
That's celery salad with walnuts and pecorino. Find it at WPR.org/Food Friday. Alexis Dabashnik is with us. Her new cookbook is called To the Last Bite, Recipes and Ideas for Making the Most of Your Ingredients. Yummy food, but also figuring out what to do with those odds and ends that get left over. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have that challenge? The thing that, you know, you use part of it and then it sits in the fridge. You don't know what to do with it. You need some advice, or did you figure out what to do with the stuff? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Here's one, Alexis. You know, sometimes I'm cooking and a recipe wants just the egg white or just the egg yolk. And it feels like a big waste. You're throwing away half the egg. What do you do with the half the egg that's left over?
Well, it depends. You know, if you have an egg yolk left over, you can add it to a dressing that's like the base of a Caesar salad dressing. It just adds some like great creaminess actually used in that celery salad that we just talked about. If you have an egg white, you can add it to, you know, you can make a little meringue. You can also add it to some like granola, homemade granola with an egg yolk, with an egg white, sorry. Makes it really like clumpy and golden and kind of that classic granola look.
Now, you are worried not just about good food, but also some about the environmental benefits of reducing food waste. Can you talk about that?
Totally. I mean, I think we're all trying to be a little more conscious, but it's really hard to know where to start. And I thought, why don't we just start with our own kitchens? You know, there's some really easy ways to start cutting down on food waste, you know, by composting, by making a grocery list before you go out to shop, rather than just saying like, oh, what looks good? You know, most of us can't eat like 7 pounds of fresh fruit as much as we want to. So really going in with intention. And I really wanted to inspire people to just think, you know, a little more consciously and creatively in the kitchen.
Now, you're in New York State right now. I think you got a pretty similar climate and growing environment to us here in Wisconsin. What kind of ingredients are you having maybe a glut of right now where the issue is, you know, what do I do with all of this blank?
Well, you know, we're still pretty early in our growing season. I mean, we had a storm about a month ago with a foot of snow. So we're off to a late start here. So I don't think we're having much of a glut of anything, but we have lettuce out for the first time in months now, which is very exciting. You know, so we're just trying to eat as many salads as possible.
Let's check out another recipe you shared with us, whipped feta and charred scallion dip. Feta, I know sometimes I have leftover, use a little bit of it in a, you know, with my chicken shawarma or whatever. Can you talk about this? It sounds like a really good dip.
Totally. I mean, it's a great way to use up feta, to use up sour cream. You're getting a lot of punch from the lime and some paprika in there and the charred scallions. You know, it's kind of an optional thing, but it adds just this great, like, smoky flavor. It's really like, think of it like the new onion dip. Charred scallion feta dip is the new onion dip, everyone.
That sounds really good. Now, scallions are one of those things where you can use a lot more of the vegetable than I would have thought, right? Like I can just sometimes totally. I like daintily just chop off the white bits and goodbye to the greens. Like you could use the whole darn thing, right?
Exactly. And that's something I talk about in the book too, you know, using parts of the ingredient that we might not, like the fennel stalks, like those are totally edible and delicious.
I'll admit I'm not a big fan of any part of the fennel. But, hey, more power to you. Now leeks. Did I read? That's one where I think the greens are going to be too tough. I'm not going up that far. If we treat them right, we could still eat them?
I mean, totally. It just takes, you know, some good butter or olive oil and just sauteing them down and they become silky and delicious, and add a little salt and you've got a side dish.
It's Food Friday. We're talking to Alexis Dobosnik, author of the new cookbook, To the Last Bite, Recipes and Ideas for Making the Most of Your Ingredients. She's got some recipes for us over at WPR.org/Food Friday. Now is your turn. We want to hear from you. Do you have a hard time using up all the leftover ingredients in your fridge? You bought a lot. You only had to use a little. You need some advice on what to do with it? Maybe it's in your fridge right now. Or have you come up with great ways to use extra food? I'm a big fan of making soup, for example, like fridge soup, I call it, whatever's in there within reason. Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Have you found a tactic or a strategy for cutting back on food waste in your own life? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up our Food Friday talk with Alexis Dobosnik about her new cookbook. It's called To the Last Bite, Recipes and Ideas for Making the Most of Your Ingredients. So good recipes, but also ways to use up the stuff that might go to waste otherwise, the stuff you use a little bit of and then it goes to mold in your fridge. Call 800-642-1234. If you have a problem in need of a solution or you've come up with solutions of your own to cut back on wasted food, call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's bring on a caller now. Esther is with us in Deer Park. Esther, hi.
Hello. Yes, I'd like to mention that when I have too much of one ingredient, if it's freezable, I will freeze it. Also, like cake mixes, it's just my husband and myself, I only use half of the cake mix and mix up half of the ingredients into the mix and then seal up the box and save the rest for another time.
Interesting. And Esther,
I've also found online that you can freeze certain canned goods like cream of mushroom soup, put it in a tight container, and or tomato products like diced tomatoes, tomato paste, and that sort of thing.
And Esther, my problem is I'll freeze stuff and then I kind of lose track, but I'm getting better at labeling stuff. Do you have a pretty good organizing system? Remember what you've got tucked away in the freezer?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like people forget how much you can freeze.
Yeah, exactly. Esther, thank you so much for sharing that with us at 800-642-1234. Alexis, how big a part of your strategy for avoiding food waste is the freezer?
Oh, huge. I mean, there's so many recipes that I mentioned where it's like, save this in the freezer for later or use it for X recipe. I mean, yeah, people should make better use of their freezers.
And thanks again for that call, Esther. You mentioned, Alexis, people could freeze more stuff than maybe we think we can. Like what kind of things might we expand our horizons to in the freezer?
I mean, I think Esther called out a great one in tomato paste. Like if you don't use that full can, scoop it out, put it in the freezer, and then you can just, you know, microwave it for a second when you need it or add it straight to the pot and it, you know, defrosts really quickly. But I think soups, certain vegetables, fruit even, you know, there's a lot of ways to make use of the freezer.
Thanks again, Esther, for that call at 800-642-1234. We heard from Jacqueline on the Ideas Network Facebook page who says, fried rice is a go-to recipe for using up extras.
Yes.
Yeah, it seems like there's a lot of kinds of foods, like a stir fry or fried rice. My soups are a way I clear the fridge a lot of the time. Are there other good sort of like Yeah, there's a dish and you make it with what you got that you like to go to, Alexis.
Totally. I mean, fried rice is one of my favorites because I feel like you can add pretty much anything in there. The same goes for something like a frittata or a quiche. You know, you can really load it with all your leftovers.
You can join in at 800-642-1234 during our Food Friday conversation about cooking and using stuff up and avoiding food waste. 800-642-1234. Alexis Dubochnik is with us. Her new cookbook is called To the Last Bite. Let's check out another recipe you've got for us, Alexis, WPR.org/Food Friday. People can find that. I love the sound of this one. Mustardy pork tenderloin with grapes and red onions. So grapes is the surprising word there for me. How does a grape fit into this?
Well, I have to be honest, I don't love just eating a grape as is, but in savory preparations, either roasted or sauteed, I think they're delicious. So the grapes just kind of soften and add like a little bit of sweetness, and they add some great, great texture to this dish. It's also a great way to use up your grapes. You know, if you buy too many of them and they're starting to kind of wilt down, just use them in this preparation and you'd never know the difference.
Yeah, I use grapes in salad all the time. I think it's just not on my radar to cook with them.
Totally. I mean, it's so easy too. It takes like, you know, 10, 15 minutes and they're good to go.
Now the pork tenderloin, can you give us some variations on that? Mustard, grapes, and red onions. Well, I don't have the grapes today or the red onions. What are some different things we might substitute in there?
Totally. I mean, again, you can use like ingredients. So if you don't have red onions, you could use leeks or you could use shallots or even scallions. If you don't have grapes, like, leave it out. It's totally fine. You know, if you don't have pork tenderloin, you could do something similar with chicken thighs or even with, you know, like a nice piece of fish like cod or a halibut or something like that.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Laura is with us in Madison. Laura, hi.
Hi.
What's your advice, Laura?
My advice is cook once and eat two or three times.
So you make a big batch to start with?
Yes. Okay. Yes. You know, like roasted chicken, you can turn that into quesadillas or tacos or chicken pasta or, you know, short ribs.
I got it.
Those and then, yeah.
So, Laura, I got to say, I like that you do it with that variety because I used to be the guy who would make a pot of rice and beans or spaghetti or whatever and eat it every day for a week. And then, of course, I'd be sick of it. So you've put some advanced thought into making sure you've got some variety.
Yeah, I usually think about what my second or third meal will be when I am making the first one or grocery shopping for the first one.
Fantastic, Laura. Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Alexis, that's totally in the spirit of your cookbook, I think.
Totally. I love that so much. And there's a few recipes that are, you know, similar to that, a chicken salad recipe. I mean, kind of the most obvious way to use up leftover chicken, but a great one.
And Laura mentioned actually being at the grocery store and having that in mind. And you talk about that little grocery store discipline as we're buying stuff to help us avoid waste, to give us the right mindset for shopping.
Totally. I think just a little bit of preparation, you know, taking 5 minutes to take stock of what you already have, making a list and going from there will save you, you know, time, money, and, you know, of course, cutting down on food waste.
We heard from our own Aubrey Ralph in the engineering department here. It says, on cakes, we cut and freeze the pieces. Then we have cake for a month, which is probably way smarter than my strategy of eating all the pieces in a day or two. Cake, generally speaking, I think freezes, when I have had the discipline to do that, cake, something like that, freezes pretty well, Alexis.
It freezes so well. And I love the idea, too, from earlier of only using half the cake mix. I mean, so smart.
We are having a Food Friday conversation, cooking with Alexis Dubochnik. Her new cookbook is called To the Last Bite, Recipes and Ideas for Making the Most of Your Ingredients. Back to your calls at 800-642-1234 with Michael on the line in Appleton. Hi, Michael.
Hey there. Thanks for taking my call. I just have a couple of quick comments. I heard fried rice mentioned, and that's one of my favorite leftover things to do, especially because it works so much better with leftover rice. And you can throw whatever vegetables, whatever meat you kind of have, and you can spice it up differently, and just super versatile. And then if people are trying to, like I am, eat less red meat, a great substitution for like a pork tenderloin is turkey tenderloin. And that's it. Thanks.
Yeah, I've used those myself, Michael. Thanks a lot for that call. And Michael says he's trying to use less red meat. And Alexis, you, I think, mentioned in the intro to your book, there's meat in the book, but you try to provide some options and not have everything be dependent on meat as the center of a dish.
Totally. I think, you know, collectively, a lot of us are trying to eat less meat in general and trying to, you know, use it for more celebratory purposes rather than an everyday thing. So I really also focused on, you know, a lot of vegetarian mains that people could get excited about, like eggplant parm, for instance.
Well, here's another one. And this is the fourth recipe you gave us at WPR.org/Food Friday, pasta with tomato confit and ricotta. Can you tell us a little bit about that one?
Oh, that's one of my favorite recipes. And it's, you know, if tomatoes are abundant and you don't know what to do with them, tomato confit is an amazing way to use them. You basically slow roast them in an oven with a lot of olive oil and aromatics like herbs and garlic. And the texture and the smell, it's just so good. It kind of makes this instant tomato sauce. And adding a dollop of ricotta on pretty much anything just makes it feel so celebratory and delicious. You know, this is kind of like a under, you know, $10 meal, and it feels like it's restaurant worthy.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Mary is with us in Wonder Lake, Illinois. Mary, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to tell us about, Mary?
Yeah, so one of my favorite go-tos, I have a almost two-year-old, so sometimes it's hard to get him to eat vegetables or breakfast foods. So one of my favorite go-tos is if I have leftovers from a vegetable dish from the night before, even a soup, I'll put it in my little mini waffle maker with some eggs and cheese. And it's a great little breakfast waffle.
That is
such a good idea.
I love it, Mary. You know, this has been years now. I talked to a guy who wrote a book, Will It Waffle, where he had just like spent years experimenting with what he could and couldn't put on his waffle maker. Mary, I love that. And I do some of that in fall. I like to make, I call them squaffles with squash with their waffles.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Mary, thank you so much for sharing that. Alexis, getting creative like that with some of the gear in our kitchen, what do you think?
Oh my God, I love it. I mean, as she was saying that, I was thinking like, oh, you could kind of do the same thing with like a fritter. You know, if you don't have a waffle iron, you know, which a lot of us don't, you know, you could do the same kind of idea with a fritter, which is so good. It's so creative. I love it.
Thanks a lot for that call, Mary. Alexis, what's your advice to that home cook who's staring right now at a pile of, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that in their fridge and thinking, I don't know what to do with this. I'm going to toss it.
I mean, I don't know about you, but it's kind of dreary here today. And I'm thinking like a good old pantry pasta. Use up those little bits to make some good pantry pasta. Saute some veggies, add some good cheese, maybe add a little, you know, hard salami in there, and you've got dinner.
And of course, some stuff we're just not going to eat or maybe can't eat. You're a big fan, I think, of composting. And I've got a composter in my backyard, getting some great material out of it for the garden this year. Can you make the case for people to try composting what they can't eat?
Totally. I mean, it's such an easy way to cut down on food waste. And if you don't have, you know, if you don't have a backyard, you can do the old freezer method, which is basically just putting your scraps into a bag or a bin in the freezer and, you know, doing a weekly deposit from there. Super easy way. And you'll be amazed at how much you can save from the trash.
Ooh, one more question. Sometimes your recipe calls for a bunch of fresh herbs. You pay sometimes a lot of money for it, but just using a little bit of sprigs. You've got those fresh herbs left. Leave us with some advice on what to do with that.
I think my biggest advice with fresh herbs is, you know, you don't have to buy all of them all the time, but find, you know, a few of your favorites. And a lot with tender herbs like parsley or dill or cilantro, you can actually use the stem. So if you just finely chop it, you can just add it with the rest of the herbs and it just adds even more flavor. No need to throw it away.
Alexis, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's Alexis Dobosnik. She's a recipe developer based in New York with us today to talk about her new cookbook. It's called To the Last Bite, Recipes and Ideas for Making the Most of Your Ingredients. You can find a link to it and four recipes we talked about today. Find them at WPR.org/Food Friday. That mustardy pork tenderloin with grapes and red onions, pasta with tomato confit and ricotta, celery salad with walnuts and pecorino, and whipped feta and charred scallion dip. Getting hungry? They're all at WPR.org/Food Friday. Coming up Monday on The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent, it takes a steady hand and a keen eye to become a Lego champion. Meet a pair of brothers who are on the competitive Lego circuit and find out about the existence of a competitive Lego circuit. That's Monday morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network. We just talked about using up our ingredients when we're cooking. I did some of that this week with a special seasonal ingredient, wild ramps. Now, I'll admit, I didn't forage for them myself. A friend had gone out foraging, dropped off a big bundle for me because he heard I liked them, which is awesome. So over the last few days, I've had sauteed ramps on burgers in some quiche that I made. Then I made a big batch of pesto with the rest of it. Half is in the fridge, headed towards some flatbread pizzas. The other half is now in the freezer. How about you? Do you have any foraged produce to tell us about this year, to share with me personally? What is it? Where did you get it? What are you doing with it? Email centraltime@wpr.org. That's centraltime@wpr.org. Tell us what you got, what you're doing with it. Maybe send pictures of your haul. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.